Well, it is another week. This is Andrew Wood, joined as always by pastor and good friend Jason Hayes. You know, Jason, the show is called Between Sundays, and I've started to use that in my vocabulary. And yesterday,
really?
Yesterday at the office, somebody was talking about a conversation she had with a friend and talking about life outside of the church walls, and I went, or between Sundays. And she just looked at me like, yeah, that's, yes, between Sundays.
Well, we have used...
Because it's mandatory that staff listen to anything that I do.
Nice. That, you know. I don't think I would have any staff left if I made that mandatory.
Yeah, trust me, they're not listening.
Well, we in the past have used the name Between Sundays for a email distribution mm-hmm. that we send out that has news and announcements. And we're actually shifting away from that. It is just going to be called News and Announcements or something of that extent.
Because the show has grown so big.
Well,
is that what you're saying?
Mostly because we don't want to put the blight on, we don't want to smear, the reputation of that solid email
with the branding
with our radio show. No, so, anyways, just trying to create
is
a little bit of a delineation.
Is this when we tell the listeners about the tattoos that we got that say Between Sundays?
I think we wait maybe a couple more weeks on that.
All right. You're healthy now. You were sick last week.
Yeah, man. I had and we apologize to our listeners that we could not be on air last week. Actually, you were out of town, and I had planned to host the show and even had a guest lined up. And then I just got just some nasty sickness, which seems to be going around everywhere.
Everybody's sick
here in East Tennessee, and I just couldn't make it. And so, sure enough, I kind of felt like I'd beaten it. And then Friday afternoon, I had bronchitis that set in, and I just barely couldn't speak, and it was just bad news all the way around. But ended up giving me a little bit of freedom because I passed on the Sunday teaching to another one of our staff members, and it gave me a little bit of freedom to go just as an onlooker, if you will, to Hope Fellowship, which is a church we planted here in kind of downtown area of Knoxville. And they opened up a brand new facility, or I should say a brand new facility to them this Sunday. And I was able to go with my wife and our three boys and to worship with them. And it was a really, really sweet morning. And so it was good all the way around. Then we had a big partner party, which is what many churches call members. You were there.
I was there.
And I had a good time Sunday night, and I was able to participate in that. So all this to say, I am healthy today.
That's good. I feel good.
How do you feel?
I'm good. You know, I went to Arizona like right as sickness was taking over the Wood family. And so it, selfishly, it worked out great for me. And I went to where there's no allergies in Tucson, Arizona. and then I came back last Wednesday evening and, everybody was sick at my house. And so, so for 2 days, I was like a single dad because Granna, my mother-in-law who lives with us, got the flu. And then my wife, Erin, was sick. And so she would come in from work and just go straight to the bed. And so I had to make supper one night. I made cinnamon toast.
Wow.
Is, you know.
Like cinnamon toast crunch? Like you poured it into a bowl?
No, but just cinnamon toast in the oven and everything. And then, and then the next morning I made pancakes. I wasn't going to, but.
It's a strong breakfast theme, man.
Yeah, that's because that's really my wheelhouse. That's really as far as my cooking ability goes, is some type of breakfast.
Very good.
And
it's
so we had pancakes.
It's amazing how, you know, I don't remember ever, when I was growing up, I don't remember us ever getting out of school for sickness. Like that did not happen.
I don't think it did.
But it feels like it's now almost every year. And I wonder why that is. That's not going to be the topic of today's show. I actually was speculating and I was wondering, because kids are around kids just as much when it comes to at school.
Yeah.
But I wonder if just this onset and kind of onslaught of after school activities, which is, you know, competitive sports and cheerleading and dance and band. All that other stuff that feels like kids are with each other every night of the week. I just wonder if that is part of the reason that we see you know, just the spreading of all the sickness. I have no idea.
I think too nowadays where back when I was younger, maybe my senior year, they had built-in days like days that we need to take off. And I think at times what school systems will do, and I don't blame them, I would too, because you're going to get a lot of flack if you open, you're going to get a lot of flack if you close. But I think what they do is they say, well, we have these days built in. It doesn't seem like it's going to snow.
Right.
So we have them. Let's use them.
Yep.
And I don't blame them. That's a tough job. Being the weatherman is tough, and being the school superintendent making that decision is very difficult because there's no way to make everybody happy.
If you want to be amused, and maybe disgusted as well, go and follow, like Knox County Schools Twitter feed after an announcement is made, because you just see like all these students celebrating and then you see these parents that are angry. Yeah. It is a mixed bag, it's an entertaining mixed bag.
It is. And I say all that with grace, but yeah.
Well, let's talk about something much, much, much more serious and something fairly heavy today. In fact, I would say quite heavy today, but we hope that it'll be a fruitful conversation.
Yeah, and so if you're familiar with the Southern Baptist denomination, or the news that have come out in recent years of the Catholic Church, what we have seen in the church, capital C, is some abuse, some sexual harassment, sexual abuse. And just the last week, Houston Chronicle released a report they've done a ton of research, and the information they have released is damning and
sure.
and should concern not just those that are part of the Southern Baptist Convention, which I am proudly very active in the Southern Baptist Convention, but should concern all of us, because what that report shows is there are some churches, and we still have a number of great churches that have amazing policies in place, but there are some churches within a denomination that have created an atmosphere that frankly empowers the abusers and predators, and not protecting the vulnerable in our children, in youth groups, in young women that may be being preyed upon, being preyed upon by pastors and staff. And that's something that should shake us to our core as Christians.
Yeah. And so today what we want to do is try to address that as best we possibly can. And as Andrew said, he is through and through a Southern Baptist. We are indeed a Shoreline. We're always quick to say that we don't raise any banner above the banner of Jesus, but we are also proud to be a part of the Southern Baptist Convention. I was trained through a Southern Baptist seminary, and that's where we line up doctrinally. It is one of these things that my fear is that these things happen across most, if not all, denominations, but the light has been put on ours, and that does not the reality that this may exist in other denominations does not minimize the intensity, and it does not minimize the seriousness of what has been revealed. And what has been revealed through the Houston Chronicle, they basically published a series of articles. And the first article was bringing to light over 380 Southern Baptist Church leaders or volunteers. Volunteers could be used fairly loosely there. And then you also have, full-time and part-time and bivocational pastors, all of that within that. But 380 Southern Baptist Church leaders or volunteers accused of sexual abuse or misconduct impacting over 700 victims and survivors, which is in itself horrifying.
Yeah.
The second piece that came out covered predators who successfully moved from one church to another. And the third piece dealt with youth pastors who prey on teens by using their access to students through the church to groom or to sexually abuse youth. And so this has been brought to light. You may or may not. In fact, I was walking out the door this morning, and I asked my wife to pray for me. I said, I've got a lot of stuff going on today. And she said, what? And I said, well, mentioned two or three things. And I said, we're talking about this on the radio. And my wife was like, what are you talking about? Because she's not, quick to jump on and follow the news and things of that sort. And there's a lot that I admire about that.
Yeah.
And so some of this may be brand new to you, but some of this may be something that you've already read. And, the point of this show is called the titles we've joked is intended between Sundays. Mm-hmm. And so, in fact, when you and I texted back and forth about what we would talk about today. We knew this is what we needed to talk about, but we didn't really want to talk about it because it's not something that we're proud of. Yeah. It's not something that we want to be associated with, but what we cannot do is minimize it or ignore it. And so we're going to bring it to light and try to speak about it in a way that I hope is honoring to Christ, but is also honoring to those that are victims, and ultimately would be honoring to the church universal. Yeah. And so that's our intent.
Well, and that's the thing. I mean, you know, some people would say, well, the world is watching, and they certainly are, and lost people are going to be watching how we respond to this. And that matters, but also what we need to recognize is victims and the vulnerable are watching how
right.
we respond to
exactly.
this. And so they're going to watch how their pastor discusses this issue. They're going to see if their volunteers and leaders within their body are sweeping this under the rug or are meeting it head on and saying, look, this is not acceptable. This is evil. And this is not going to be something that we're going to tolerate within our convention. And so if we wouldn't tolerate it in our home, then we shouldn't tolerate it in our church.
Right.
And it's one of those things where it's a tough, uncomfortable discussion. And yes, I understand there's due process and all of those things, certainly, but that's why authorities need to be involved and
right.
we need to have mandatory reporting and you need to take serious when someone comes to you. But as the church, what we have to do initially is enter into a time of sorrow and grief
right.
and repentance.
Yeah.
And it's something that we have to, again, meet head on and say, no, this is a time for us not to go on the defensive immediately,
right.
but to sit back and go, we need to repent,
right.
For creating spaces that empower abusers and make the vulnerable run to the shadows.
Yeah. I think I think you are just hitting it head on. I mean, I think that is exactly right. The first place you start in this, you know, not even in a discussion, but the first place you start in this is grief. It is prayer for victims. It is sorrow. I mean, there is nothing more evil, in my opinion, than using the church
mm-hmm.
or using the kingdom to somehow justify or cover up not just sin, but abuse. And these are massive issues that we have to think about. I was talking with our staff a couple days ago, I guess, and we were going through a book that's completely unrelated to all mm-hmm. of this. And we were talking about the book, and some of us had pushed back to it, and some of us didn't. And I was talking about, you know, when you read a book, you can kind of look at how you immediately respond to it, and it's at times can be an indication of your heart.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a lot of good things that are said, but you immediately push back on it. And I think something like this, it might be an indication of our heart when we hear this and we look at these things. And if our first response isn't grief and sorrow and kind of a corporate repentance, then I think our heart needs some serious introspection. It shouldn't be a first step towards defense. It should be a first step towards grief and prayer and thinking about those that have been hurt.
And we'll continue that conversation when we come back. So as we continue the conversation on the recent Houston Chronicle article and really what we were talking about off air is the Houston Chronicle article brought to light and kind of brought the information out of the shadows. But the reality is with the election of J.D. Greer, and this is going to get into some of the weeds of the Southern Baptist Convention, but with the election of J.D. Greer, Russell Moore leading the ERLC and some other leaders being put in place, we were already starting a process of dealing with these issues within the church. And we saw quickly J.D. Greer put committees together to discuss, study committees together to discuss abuse within the church. And so this was already a process. This kind of sped it up a little bit. And so also within the Southern Baptist Convention, you have autonomy. You have churches
right.
that sit alone. Sure, they're part of the convention, but no one from the Southern Baptist Convention is calling Jason and saying, this is what you're preaching on this Sunday.
Right.
This is how you need to have elders or deacons, or this is how your structure should look like.
If something comes up, this is where our expectation is for you to sweep
right.
someone under the rug. I mean, there is, there, it is worth noting, and this is not just true for Southern Baptist sure. Life, and I would say that, you know, we're feeling this right now, but my hunch is that a lot of our friends in the Catholic Church, while we might not align with them on a lot of things, right. doctrine, theology, there's a number of things, and practice, but I think that at times we have to be careful that we don't put these big, broad, sweeping kind of character traits on the entire church. And so we don't want to minimize 700 victims. It is gut-wrenching mm-hmm. to consider that there are 700 victims out there. But I also want you to know that there are tens of thousands of SBC churches, and many of them are as heartbroken, and I would say most of them are as heartbroken as we are yeah. over this. And many, 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 if not most of them, have really, really good practice in place trying to avoid these things and to handle these things when it does occur. And so we want to be careful to not throw out broad sweeping accusations here. But on the other hand, what we want to do is we want to think about, is there something to be learned for all of us from the perspective of the churchmen? And when I say the churchmen, obviously we know that the church is everyone. It's together. It's the staff. It is an eldership or a deacon board, but it is also the layperson. We are one church. But for the sake of this conversation, I want to talk about it a little bit in the distinctives of, okay, you have kind of church leadership mm-hmm. and then you have lay people. And so let's talk in this segment a bit about what are some of the responsibilities that kind of church leadership need to consider and to take on when something like this is brought to light, and maybe not just when something like this has been brought to light, just maybe I should say in light of what has yeah. been brought forth.
And one thing to note too, the importance of this is autonomy can be good, it can be bad. In this case, it can be a good thing that the thousands of churches that already have policies in place can hold accountable those that have not been putting the policies in place. And so it's important that we, and I talk about this a lot in the work that I do with Hope Resource Center, if there are pregnancy centers out there that are not doing the work to the level they need to be doing it, I'm going to call them out.
Right.
Because we want to do better. We want to serve better. And so in the same sense, we have churches across the country. This is an opportunity for us as the church to say, look, These are certain things policy wise. These are things that we need to put in place. Do you need help with that? Maybe you're a smaller church. Maybe you're a church that hasn't really dealt with it. We can step in and help that process and work in conjunction with each other. Again, keeping your autonomy, but understanding it's okay to reach out and say, look, I don't even know where to begin.
Right.
How does that look? And so from that standpoint, from a leadership standpoint, when I was a kids pastor, this was always a concern. When somebody said they wanted to volunteer and serve in the kids ministry, background checks, conversations with their references, with friends of theirs. Are there any red flags? Any
right.
red flags?
Right.
Because if there's any red flags, we need to be a people that go, I'm sorry, this is not the area for you to volunteer. And here's right. why. Because we want to go above and beyond in protecting our young people at church, our kids, and understanding that. And so talk a little bit about that from a pastor standpoint, the importance of, look, we're grace, we're Jesus people, but we also have things in place as far as background checks and to note red flags that may come up when someone wants to help or assist, or not just volunteers, but even staff members.
Yeah, I would just say if you are either a church leader that's listening or you are a part of a church, you need to make sure that your children's ministry and maybe just church as a whole has policies in place that speak towards requirements for children's workers, for student workers, and that has to include a background check to start with. It must include a background check. Is that cheap? It is not cheap.
No.
But I can assure you that the integrity of the body and the preventative nature that comes with something like that is well worth the expense. And so for starters, you got to put that into place. Secondly, there should be certain rules and policies of children's workers and student workers. I mean, you know, we have rules as simple as, you know, you don't ever take someone to the bathroom mm-hmm. alone, or you don't ever really need to be alone, or this is the way that if you have to take someone to you know, for lack of a better description, the clinic, you know, or someone needs to go see their parents, or someone needs some special care, this is how that has to happen to avoid isolation, to avoid any type of confusion, mm-hmm. To avoid, and not just even for the protection of the children, but also to protect a really wonderful volunteer who right. could somehow have been, you know, perceived as doing something that they may have not been. I mean, there has to be policies in place. I'm going to throw this out here as well, and I do not hear me saying that, that anyone, I don't want to put responsibility on the wrong shoulders here. Mm-hmm. You know, when you have a predator, I don't want to, I want to put that on the shoulders of the predator. I do think that a certain responsibility sits, of course, on the shoulders of church leadership.
Right.
We have to protect the flock. But let me just speak towards just lay people for a second. My curiosity probably has piqued wondering how many of those children's workers got in due to bad systems, and how many of those children's workers got in because the church was desperate.
That's true.
They flat out just yep. were desperate. They couldn't get other people to serve. They couldn't get another person to go on the youth retreat. They couldn't get someone to work in the nursery. And so one person who comes in that seems smiley and seems friendly, and they didn't do a background check on them, but boy, there's six, you know, 3-year-olds that are crying in right. in the nursery that we need their help. And so I would just challenge, you know, our churches, let's fill these spots with really wonderful, God-fearing, you know, people that are going to treat children appropriately and correctly in a way that honors Christ and honors the church. And so if you're not doing that, can I just ask you to not put your leaders mm-hmm. in those situations where they might feel desperate and they might feel tempted to invite someone into a children's ministry that maybe they don't know as much, or a student ministry that they may not know as much about as they probably should.
Well, and I would say too, along those lines, from a leadership standpoint, when we have applications and we say list 3 references, list not just secular references but ministry references, it's important that we don't just put that and then not do anything with it.
Right.
We need to be, as leaders, calling those references.
Right.
And having conversations with people that have worked alongside that person, that have had that person volunteer in their ministry. And if you are one of those references, I would challenge you to be a person that is honest.
Yep.
Because what we know from the Houston Chronicle article, and what we know from our own experience, is some of these folks were left a church where known abuse was occurring, and went and joined and were hired on at another church.
Right.
And no one ever communicated to the new church, hey, this person violated somebody, or this person abused somebody, or this person was a predator inside of our walls. We have to have communication. I know the SBC is working on some online communication and what that looks like, but we need to be in the kingdom willing to be honest
yeah.
about those things. That's not removing grace from people. It's protecting others, protecting that person as well. Maybe they are on the other side of it, but it's still, we want to protect all parties involved, and certainly the vulnerable in our kids.
Yeah, we'll talk about that when we come back.
So a tough conversation today, but a much needed one. And if you're in the I hesitate to say if you're in the Southern Baptist world, if you're involved in the church, this is an issue that needs to be discussed. It's a conversation that we've seen even at a secular level, as we saw the Me Too movement in 2018 and abuse going on in Hollywood, and we've seen over the last couple years, we've seen pastors at very large congregations that be fired and removed because of not necessarily sexual abuse, but because of bad leadership and overbearing leadership and kind of letting power and their ego grow. And so we, this is something that doesn't just happen outside the walls of the church.
Right.
We know that, and we talk about this so often, that Genesis 3, sin entered the world, fractured everything. Guess what? That means your churches are filled with broken people.
Yeah.
And you're going to go to church on Sunday, and everybody's not perfect. They may have a perfect suit on. They may have a perfect smile on, but they're not perfect. They're broken. And they have, they may even have skeletons in their closet. And so as we're talking about, let's kind of end that conversation with what church pastors and leadership should do. But as we were talking off air, you were talking about even down to, and to some people this may not mean anything, but even down to changing your membership. So leaving one church and going to another, especially within the Southern Baptist Commission, it's called moving my letter.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is such
it's kind of a law. For many churches, it is, I wouldn't even call it an art, but if I was, it would be a lost art.
Yeah.
You know, it has been kind of a nicety that has existed among churches, and sometimes it crosses denominations, but it is, especially within Southern Baptist life, in the past, there was this acknowledgement of, hey, if someone is leaving my congregation to go to your congregation, whether they simply just felt called to a new place of worship,
sure,
or they moved to a new city, job transfer, anything of that sort, that there would at least be some communication. And again, in that context, it was a letter, and it would say, you know, this person's in right standing, or just even to some degree, just trying to keep roll books clean,
sure,
you know.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't necessarily say we need to move back to that. But
yeah, yeah.
I do think what we have to be mindful of is if there is anyone who has been in your church that, and I would say notably, if they've left your church under some cloud of questioning, or maybe you'd never, you saw things that you were uncomfortable with, and maybe you brought it to their attention, addressed it, confronted them, and those people have left, you cannot say that you're just done with it.
Mm-hmm.
And that is not the responsible thing for the kingdom. If you know that person is now moving on to another church. Now, I'm not talking about, hey, I didn't like this guy and his views on the Vols.
Right.
You know, no, I'm talking about if this person has been deemed as a threat, or has brought concern upon the safety of children or students, or for that matter, anyone in your congregation,
yeah,
and they go to another congregation, you owe it to that leader, to that pastor, to that church, to that congregation. You owe it to them to do that. And it doesn't mean that you're going to go and throw someone's character under the bus. It means that you simply might say, this is what happened with us. You may not experience that at all, but we owe it to you to know this is what happened with us. And so that would be something. I would also say this before we move into kind of the other side of this conversation. I think it's really, really important that our leaders, our pastors, are people that are seen as not just people of integrity, but people that are also approachable,
mm-hmm,
people that put the value of the individual above the organization. And because if someone has had something happen to them or seem concerned about something that is going on, and if they do not feel a trust to share that with a leader, that is an indictment on the leader.
Yeah.
It is an indictment on the culture of the church, because maybe they're fearful that that person's not going to believe them. They're fearful that that person's going to try to sweep it under the rug. Again, that is an indictment on the leadership of the church. And so we have to be people that to stand in integrity, and a piece of that integrity is a vulnerability and an openness and an acceptance to hear those things, and to not respond, you know, in a crazy way, but to respond appropriately and to get to the bottom of things, and to do that responsibly, and then to handle it biblically. And that's really, really important.
Well, and what comes with that is credibility. And so for a leader within the church to have credibility, they need to be present, not just on Sundays on the stage,
right,
but do people see them as someone that can be approached about a number of things, even if it's a, hey, pastor, how are you? Or anything like that. Or do they feel like, ooh, I can't even say hello to him because that would be inappropriate for me to say hello to the pastor. Like we need to create, I get it, as churches, you know, some churches are larger than others, and it's difficult to have all of those moments. But in order to have credibility, the pastor is not just a preacher, but he's a pastor.
Right.
And there has to be a presence there to say, look, I'm here and available if these things are going on. Also understanding, not being overbearing and overseeing the children's pastor or the youth pastor or student pastor, but being present there as well.
Sure.
So that the students know, if I have anything that I need to say, I can go to the leadership. So what are some things from a lay standpoint, from people that are members or partners of a church, what are some things that we can do to walk through this issue as well as we are making sure we're protecting, because lay people are going to be volunteers. Lay people are going to be seeing things. What are some things that we can do to help with this process as well?
Well, we just talked about, you know, the leader or leadership being open to things being brought before them.
Mm-hmm.
That implies a certain responsibility that if a layperson sees something, is concerned about something, that it is indeed not just this thing that we sit on our hands and hope goes away, but we go to leadership.
Yeah.
And we deal with these issues. And at times that is hard. A lot of times people say, I don't want to be in the midst of that. I don't want to be part of those conversations. Don't get me all caught up in all that stuff. You don't may not even necessarily have to be caught up in it all, but you can at least have some people look at things.
Yeah.
I can't tell you how many times over the years, and I don't mean, you know, specific to any one congregation, but many times over 20 plus years of ministry, where something was brought to light to me eventually, or I would find out about something, you know, someone living in sin, someone,
yeah,
doing something that stands in opposition to the things of God or the commitment they've made as a partner of our church. And I would hear after, mm-hmm, from people, yeah, I saw that. I'd kind of seen that, or yeah, I thought about that. And multiple times I wanted to say, why did you not say something?
Yeah.
Why would you not bring this? We're not immediately going to condemn people, but if you see things,
yeah,
for the betterment of the body and for the protection of the body, please bring it to light. And so I just would implore people that if you are maybe seeing something, or you're aware of something, or you're concerned about something, please just come in, walk in the door somewhere and have that conversation. And then I would say to you, by all means, maybe a first conversation might be to a church person or to a leader. But I want to clearly say this. If it is not evident, if a criminal,
right,
act has been, you know, has occurred, if that leadership is not immediately bringing that to authorities,
mm-hmm,
you take it to authorities.
Absolutely.
If that leadership is failing those victims and is failing your church by not handling it appropriately and bringing it to authorities, I do believe the responsibility of the layperson is to then take it to authorities.
Yeah.
And again, maybe for some, they might say, I'm taking it to authorities first. You know, whatever it may be, both of those conversations have to happen, and one should not restrict the other.
Yeah, and as we have those conversations too, I think even as grown people, the not being a tattletale that we were constantly told as a child continues as we're adults. And so we may see something and we go, well, I don't want to get involved.
Right.
If I say something, and it's probably nothing. And yeah, it probably is nothing.
Which is the thing that I've said to many people. If it's nothing, no big deal.
What we'll do is
we'll just establish, we'll look into it. We'll establish there was nothing, and we'll say thank you for,
yeah,
you know, thank you for kind of fighting for the integrity of the church. We'll deal with it. And if there's nothing to really deal with, then we'll come back and we'll proceed.
It's one of those things where, again, we need to make sure that that our churches are places where people feel like they can come and be open and honest. And frankly, it's not just those that might have been abused within the church walls, but we are also having,
right,
people
That's
that come.
Word.
We're having people that come that have past abuse. And so are we creating an atmosphere that is one of safety and care for them, or are we creating an atmosphere where they run to the shadows? And that's what we don't want. The gospel is and what God does is he brings light to the darkness. And so as a church, we are to be bringing people out of the darkness, not pushing them to the corners, because we're creating atmospheres that aren't conducive to bringing gospel light to people. We'll talk more when we come back. So today's conversation, we pray, has been fruitful and helpful as we walk through this the darkness that we're seeing. And the truth of the matter is these are tough conversations, but they're much needed conversations. And there's a lot of pastors and leaders throughout the Southern Baptist Convention that are openly speaking and dealing with this. And that's a positive thing, that we're not seeing the Houston Chronicle article and going, no, that's not true. But they're actually stepping in to do something about it. So we'll keep you updated as things come out and as more conversations occur. We'll talk about that on the show. But we now, as we close out the show, Jason, as we talk about Shoreline, the Lord is doing some amazing things, not just through Shoreline, but through the churches of Knoxville. And Shoreline recently in the last few months added a third service. And what we have seen through that is the second service,
9:45
service is exploding because it's the perfect time. It's what everybody wants to be.
It is where everyone wants to be.
And then you have the 11 o'clock service,
which is really, really full.
The 11 o'clock service is growing, but that's more of the traditional time. A lot of people meet and go to church on.
Yeah.
But the time that you really have some seats available is the 8:30 slot. On 8:30 in the morning.
Yeah, all three services, to be clear, all three services are identical.
Right.
It's just that, we are slam-packed.
I lead worship in the 8:30.
That is not true. That would be the reason that people are not coming. No, we actually have a good crowd of folks that come at 8:30. We just have more space to grow in that 8:30. And so I would just remind, for those of our partners that are listening, hey, remember, on the Sundays you can come to 8:30. If you are a guest and considering checking out Shoreline, by all means, come at any hour, 8:30, 9:45, 11 o'clock. We will make room for you.
Sure.
We celebrate that. We don't want to minimize how God's growing our body. And that is not just through, some type of transfer growth or just people kind of moving into the community. We are seeing lives changed. We truly are seeing disciples made. And so we celebrate that. All kinds of incredible fun stuff going on. We've got a men's ministry that's really kind of taking root right now. And so if you're a man out there listening and said, I could use some fellowship and maybe some accountability from other men, you can find that information on our website. Celebrate Recovery just celebrated their one-year anniversary. And, man, it's unbelievable.
Yeah.
Like each and every one of us have a hurt, habit, or hang up that we need to address. And so we're seeing people not only experience freedom, but we're also seeing God use those people to impact our church in such glorious ways. And so we're super, super thankful for that. That's on Tuesday nights. Again, all that information is available at shorelineknox.com.
Yeah.
What's going on with Hope? What do we need to
know? Yeah, well, at Hope, we have 14 baby showers we're throwing next week.
Praise the Lord.
So if you're listening and between now and next Thursday, we could use some newborn-sized diapers. They need to be brand new. We don't take used diapers.
It's not as effective.
I think it's important that we recognize that. but if you want to be a part of that and help with us, we would love for you to provide those. Our address is 2700 Painter Avenue, Knoxville, Tennessee 37919. And you can just go to Amazon. You can ship them to us. We would appreciate that. Maybe I had somebody reach out yesterday and say, look, I'm no longer in need of newborn diapers, but the packages are open. They're just sitting there, but I can't use them. And so she is taking the lead and going to create a bunch of diaper cakes to give to each patient because they're not wrapped up. And so any of those things are certainly great opportunities to love on our city. And man, the baby showers that we get to be a part of are truly remarkable as we get to see life change. And as you were talking about, things going on at Shoreline and how it's not just transfer growth, but it's new folks. I spoke at Ignition Church, this past Sunday, and I spoke at some other churches the past month. And what I'm reminded of every time I speak at those places is there are people within those walls that didn't grow up yeah. in the church, that right. weren't in the church every time the doors were open, and actually received an email from someone saying just that. Look, when you discuss Genesis 3, that Adam and Eve seems like a normal story, but it wasn't for me. Thank you for opening my eyes to what happened there. And so just trust that the Lord is moving in that. We appreciate y'all listening, and let's do it again next week.
We'll be back.